Hi, everyone. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Welcome to Yoga, Birth, Babies, a podcast produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. We will be diving into everything prenatal yoga, birth, and baby-related, hoping to inspire, educate, and empower you through your journey into motherhood. Thank you for listening. Hi, I'm Deb Flaschenberg. I'm your host of Yoga Birth Babies. And today we have a community birth story. So I have Jay Stewart as my guest. I had the honor and pleasure of having Jay in our prenatal classes for a good part of her pregnancy, at least 20 weeks. And then she came back for postnatal. Now, during pregnancy, a theme that often came up in class was about control. And it was interesting. At that particular time in class, a lot of people resonated with that. And trust me, as a type A personality myself, I resonate with that too. So when Jay came back after she had her baby, I checked in. How did that go? And she talked to me that she had two huge moments of surrender during her birth that she had to come to grips with. She's had to release, let go, and let things happen. And I thought, wow, that was a really big thing, especially when one comes with a history of control, which again, many of us do. So I asked Jay, would you be a guest on the podcast? And she said, yes. And it's such a great conversation. She really opens up. She talks about medication during pregnancy, anxiety and depression during pregnancy. How do you learn to trust yourself? How do release fears. It was such a wonderful conversation that I am so excited to share it with you. Before we get to that amazing conversation, I just want to give you a little update about what's going on at the studio. So we've decided to have a bit of a soft opening right now. So we're offering just a few classes in person as we gear up for more classes. And I'm really excited about that. So starting July 7th, we're going to have more live morning in-person classes at the studio. At the same time, we're going to continue those classes online. So if you're listening to this and you're like, oh my gosh, I've been taking class and I'm living on the West Coast, don't worry, I got you covered. We're going to still maintain that relationship. We're going to open up the studio for more in-person classes while maintaining and continuing to grow our online presence because we've created an amazing online community and I want to keep that thriving. It really feeds my soul to see how our community is growing. So thank you. Thank you for helping us grow that community. And then what else? Oh, you know, I have a little homework for everyone. If you haven't yet gone to our website and downloaded the free 5 Simple Solutions to the Most Common Pregnancy Pains, do so. It's a downloadable. It's like a little guide, a little cheat sheet for when you can't take a full class, but your body's achy, and it's just as good for postnatal. A lot of the same issues come up, backache, shoulder, neck. I got you covered there. So check that out, 5 Simple Solutions to the Most Common Pregnancy Pains. I also want to thank everyone who's taken the time to leave a rating and review. It's made people find the podcast better. It just helps up our presence. And I hope that you're enjoying what you're getting from the podcast. So thank you to those who haven't. And if you have a moment, please do so. And then the last announcement is now that things are opening up, we've made a commitment to continuing our online teacher training through 2021. But we're really excited that come the spring, we're going to do an in-person in New York City teacher training. So we'll do our September, October, our November, December, and then we're actually going to be in Washington, D.C. So if you're in that area, we'll be doing a January, February in-person, and then back to New York City for March and April. So plenty of prenatal yoga teacher training. If you don't want to have to travel, join the ones this fall because I don't know what's going to happen with Yoga Alliance and our online teacher training after that. Okay, we're going to take a super quick break and when we come back, please enjoy my absolutely wonderful conversation with Jay Stewart. Hi, Jay. How are you?
I'm doing great. I am so, so thrilled to be here and tell you about my birth story.
I'm really looking forward to it. I remember when you came back for that one postnatal class and you talked about these moments of surrender. I'm like, oh, let's dig into that. So I'm super excited about that. But before we get into that, why don't you just share a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Yeah. So I am 34 years old and I live in Brooklyn, New York with my husband, Jacob, and my now 14-week-old son, Wallace, and our pit bull bulldog, Reuben. And I, last year, I graduated from NC State University with a PhD in applied social and community psychology. And then since then, I've been kind of figuring out my next move inside of a difficult pregnancy. And we'll get into a little bit more of that later.
Yeah, I love your dog, by the way. So every time your dog would come onto the screen, first of all, I love dogs, even though my husband's like, why can't we get one? But there's something very endearing about your dog. So I just want to tell you, he has a spot in my heart. So let's dive into your pregnancy. You mentioned it was difficult, and I did have the honor of seeing you for a good part of that. So will you share a little bit about it?
Yeah. So I just want to start by saying that I am a very type A, sort of hyper planful person, which I think that, you know, became very clear in the time that you knew me during prenatal yoga.
But those conversations about control, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that was definitely a huge theme throughout my pregnancy, and really predated it. My husband and I decided easily a year in advance that we were going to start trying to get pregnant in January 2020. I determined that sort of perfect date to try based on, you know, how it would align with, you know, I'd be far enough in grad school that it wouldn't mess anything up if I did get pregnant. And, but also, you know, we'd still be moving back to New York City as planned. And, you know, just, it was a perfect date in my mind. and I was fortunate to get pregnant on the second try. So I got pregnant pretty quickly, but unfortunately that pregnancy ended in a miscarriage around 7 weeks, which absolutely devastated me. At the time, two of my best friends were also pregnant. And so that was really fun. The miscarriage took place in the March of 2020, and it was sort of oddly bookended by submitting and defending my dissertation, which are kind of like the two final milestones of completing the degree. The whole experience of it involved this week of uncertainty where I didn't even know if it was a miscarriage. And then it finally was confirmed via a pretty harrowing ultrasound. It wasn't even confirmed then, but there was this really horrible ultrasound that I just kind of, to this day, kind of still haunts me. But ultimately, I did induce the miscarriage at home using Cytotec. And so kind of the whole experience was about 2 weeks. And during that time, the whole backdrop of this miscarriage experience for me, COVID really got real and everything started shutting down. So it's just this like extremely devastating and disorienting time where, you know, my whole world was really just falling to pieces while the world around me was really crumbling and just kind of all sense of this future that I had, you know, planned out to a T was just really ripped away. After all of that, I was really desperate to alleviate that pain. And I felt the only way that I could possibly do that was to get pregnant again, even though I don't think that I was actually emotionally ready. Mm-hmm. But fortunately it did happen again, pretty quickly. So I was super excited, but also, you know, this pregnancy came with this whole other layer of anxiety around it, because I don't think that I was actually healed from that miscarriage emotionally in any way. And I had actually worked with a midwife for that first pregnancy who, you know, saw me through that miscarriage, and, you know, it was really great and talked me through kind of, you know, we talked a lot about, I told her I did want to get pregnant again as soon as possible and that we were going to be moving back to New York City. And she told me about this really awesome midwife that she follows on Instagram, Chloe Lubel, who I think you've had on the podcast before.
I have.
And she, you know, she I followed her page, and it became clear that she's, you know, in addition to just being kind of an awesome midwife who, you know, is really kind of thorough in how she talks about birth work, she is also super passionate about reproductive justice and inclusivity, and informed consent, and all these values that are just super important to me in my own work. And I just kind of was really drawn to working with a provider who was also very passionate about that. So I emailed her, found out that I was pregnant. She was previously working in a hospital at Mount Sinai West, or a practice that delivered at Mount Sinai West, when I was first told about her. But then by the time that I was pregnant again, she had just started her own home birth practice, which wasn't, you know, I had kind of always thought of myself as someone who wanted to deliver at a birth center. I didn't really see home birth. Like, for me, that seemed a little too outside of my comfort zone. But based on where we ended up living in Brooklyn, that was so close to a hospital, and I just really loved Chloe, and because of COVID also, like, it just ended up seeming like it made a lot of sense to me. So I just, you know, we met with her and only her, and just kind of immediately wanted to move forward with her. So that was great that I had, you know, this awesome provider right off the bat.
What did you find was challenging moving into this pregnancy? And as you explain, and I don't think I realized quite how close the two pregnancies were. A lot. So again, we kind of joked about like the type A and the control, but it makes sense having a loss and then wanting to get pregnant again. I can see why one would want to have control, because the loss was out of your control and I could see the gripping tighter. So what else, what did you find challenging moving forward through your pregnancy?
Well, I can remember, you know, we were only planning on one child, although now I'm a little bit like, oh, I don't know about that. but I remember.
Usually it's the other way around, by the way. Usually it's like you realize this is hard. We're only having one.
when I first found out, I remember, despite how devastated I was, I kept telling myself, you know, this is potentially my only time to experience this state of being pregnant. And I had looked forward to that for so long. And I really, really didn't want, you know, my loss to detract from it altogether. So it was this push-pull of really trying to embrace the new experience, but at the same time, like, it just was kind of unavoidable to be sort of haunted by that. It was just a struggle is all I can really say. That, you know, I was mindful of it, like to try and not let it derail everything. But I think it caused me to sort of doubt things the whole way through. I don't think I really kind of felt secure in the pregnancy that it was, you know, really happening until at least week 20 after that ultrasound. And then when I started feeling the kicks and everything. I guess it was just a real struggle to not let that completely detract from the whole experience.
I think that's normal. I've done a few different podcasts on miscarriage, and I myself had one. And I know in my mind, I had to pass that point of where I lost the baby. And then it even took a few more weeks after that to really start to feel secure and trust.
Right.
One thing I know we had talked about in the past was anxiety and depression during pregnancy. Do you want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, you know, very early on in my pregnancy, I became very, very sick in terms of nausea and vomiting. And, you know, had even had to go to the emergency room somewhere around 9 weeks. I ended up having to take like 3 medications just to manage the vomiting, even though I was like pretty much still nauseous 24/7 and still threw up a lot. But like, I mean, I don't think I would have been able to eat anything if I didn't. And so like, you know, it did sort of start to taper off around week 14, but didn't completely subside until week 20. So basically, I mean, that to be so debilitated like that, I mean, it's just kind of hard to not be depressed. Mm-hmm. But even after that vomiting kind of lifted, and I did have like a whole month of like awful, awful headaches on top of it. But even after kind of my, like the intense physical ailments lifted, I still felt really depressed. And I knew that I had had like, you know, mental health problems in, you know, my early 20s. So I knew that this was like a potential, like I knew that I was sensitive to hormonal birth control and that, you know, that hormone, like intense hormones had the possibility of shaking up my mental health. But I was really, really resistant to taking any type of psychotropic drugs because that in the past had just sort of numbed me out and made me feel absolutely nothing, which is almost worse. But Chloe ended up connecting me with a great perinatal psychiatric nurse practitioner. And she, in combination with my regular therapist and Chloe, like together, they were, you know, helping me see that this depression was really taking me down. And I just, you know, I just had absolutely no motivation in my work whatsoever. It was a huge identity shift for me. I mean, like I am normally an extremely motivated person, and very passionate about my work, and all of that just kind of collapsed during pregnancy. So it was just really, really difficult for me. But I did end up moving forward with starting Zoloft, which did help me feel just hugely better within 3 weeks, though not 100%. And you know, I did kind of struggle mentally throughout my whole pregnancy, but I will say that I wasn't functioning for a while, and that kind of got me out of a really dark place. So I'm really, really grateful that I did decide to move forward with that.
I'm really glad that you shared that. So I want to thank you for that. First of all, being vulnerable and open about that. But I feel like that idea of, oh, I don't know if I want to take medication, I'm pregnant, I think that lives in a lot of people's minds. And I'm just appreciative that you shared what it was like to take that and the after effects, that it really did help lift you out of that funk. And I think certain drugs I know are not ideal for pregnancy, but there definitely are some that can, so that can help. Because could you imagine going through your whole pregnancy with that disconnect and then how that might have affected bonding with your baby?
Totally. And I, one of the things that really motivated me to, pursue the treatment was, the nurse practitioner that I was seeing, who also used to be a midwife. So that was really great that she, you know, had that lens as well. But she said that treating it during pregnancy really, really helps to prevent it postpartum. Which, you know, it's one thing to be dealing with it during pregnancy, but then, you know, when you actually have the baby, like everyone wants to have a good postpartum, like everyone wants to have a good pregnancy, but like, particularly when you're becoming a mother, or a parent, like you want that experience to not be shrouded in depression.
I mean, it's hard enough as it is on a good day. So yeah.
Right. Yeah. And it also, like, I just have to say, like, it really, even though I knew it was possible to have a mental health issue in pregnancy, it threw me through a loop because I was not aware that I'd never heard a story of someone saying that they dealt with depression during pregnancy that arose during pregnancy. So it was, pretty surprising to me, to say the least.
Well, I'm glad that you said it so that someone else out there that might be listening to this, that might be feeling depressed and in that spiral downward, might hear, okay, I can get through this, and there's ways, there's tools and ways to deal with it. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about, I know your birth is long, so yeah. we're gonna go for the abridged version. We're gonna take a super quick break, and we come back. Let's dive into your birth story. We'll be right back.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic, and finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, so I'd love to hear your story. And again, I just keep remember those themes of control. And I just remember you talked, I think you said there are two big surrendering points where you had to just come to grips and let it go. So I'd love to hear about that.
So the whole theme of surrender ended up being this just really powerful theme throughout my birth story, and it just kind of continues to be this really special story to reflect on now. I woke up on Saturday, February 6th, and I had this big wet spot on my pajama pants, and I wasn't quite sure if my water had broken or if I had just peed myself, which, is honestly very quite possible at the end of pregnancy. So I called Chloe, and told her what happened and told her that I wasn't sure. So I ended up just sort of taking the dog on a walk. And while I was out with him, the liquid picked up, and then I became very sure that that's definitely what happened. So I came home and I was super excited, and I just sort of tidied up around the house and tried to get some rest and eat some things and, just really kind of prepare for birth, because I had no idea when things were going to really kick in. I had been crampy, like period cramps, for like easily a month. I didn't feel anything like a contraction other than Braxton Hicks. So I did start bleeding somewhere in there throughout the day, which Chloe said was totally normal. And she had actually suggested that I call the acupuncturist that I'd been seeing in the last month of pregnancy, Stephanie. And so Stephanie had actually come the day before. So I'm a big advocate for acupuncture for labor induction or encouragement, if you will, because I think it really had a big effect on me. So she was able to come over again. And so she came over sometime in the afternoon, and she did acupuncture, and she also brought the moxibustion sticks, as well, which was really, soothing, and I liked that a lot. And a long story short, my original birth doula was not available. So my postpartum doula, Erica, ended up becoming my birth doula, which, I was initially kind of worried about, because I knew we wanted support right away, after the birth, but, and I needed her to, you know, not have just been at my birth for hours and hours. But it ended up being exactly how it wanted, how it should have been. And Eric is just amazing. So I'm so grateful that that's how it turned out. And so I'm not sure exactly when my contractions started, but they started sometime, or they really kind of set in sometime in the evening, and they seemed to come on very quickly and intensely, like within a very short amount of time. We started timing them, and they were like 2 to 4 minutes apart. And so I was just like laboring on the bed in our bedroom, and I, you know, very quickly couldn't talk through them. I needed the room to be quiet and dark. I think we just had like one candle on. And soon after, Erica ended up coming over. And I told her very, very soon after she got there that I really wanted Chloe to come, just because I wanted to make sure everything was safe with me and the baby. And so Chloe, did end up coming over soon. And I think she got there somewhere around midnight. And so she checked me right away and everything was good. And she gave me the go ahead to get in the tub. So this was the first time that I like left the bedroom, and I walked out into the room, and they had everything set up with the tub going and a bunch of candles lit, and it was snowing outside and the dog was all cozy on the couch, and it was just, I had this like home birth playlist on that I didn't even think that I would want to listen to, but just the whole environment ended up being this very like idyllic home birth experience that I was so grateful that I got to have a couple hours of that. Because it was really shift. Beautiful. And, yeah, it really like derailed. Yeah, it was really great. And I think up until then, I was really coping very well. I spent about 3 hours in the tub, and the tub just like sinking into that tub was just like the greatest relief ever. I loved it. But somewhere in while I was in the tub, things got so intense that I started to really spook myself about how was I ever going to push on top of the pain of contractions, because I just couldn't fathom doing that. It was just so intense, and I knew that pushing takes a lot of strength. And so my things really started to peter out, because I think I just kind of spooked myself. So I think somewhere around 3 a.m., I ended up needing to get out of the tub. And I went into our bedroom again, and I needed to just lay down and rest. And they put the breast pump on me and was like holding that up to me just to, you know, not let things completely stop. And that was the first time that I asked Chloe to check to see how dilated I was. And you always talk about like the labor math. and you know, I'm not sure how good or not it was to have done this, but I definitely got fixated on it. But so she did check me, and I was 6 centimeters and 90% of fate, which I was like, okay. I mean, it's not a 10, but I wasn't like a 3. So I was like, okay, well, that's something. I'm more than halfway there. Like, that's good, I guess. But I was totally exhausted. And so I did decide to rest, even though my contractions were still happening. They were just kind of, I was able to rest through the contractions. And Chloe had given me baking soda and water because my muscles had gotten so tense. And that was the most disgusting thing that I drank the whole time. Between like some acupuncture herbs and, I eventually did the castor oil, all of that. The baking soda and the water was what got me.
The baking soda and water was worse than the castor oil?
It was awful. I don't know what Chloe had put in the castor oil. Like, she made it into some sort of smoothie, but it wasn't bad at all.
Pulled out all the stops. I've done castor oil for a cleanse, and I've done it with clients, and it's kind of messy. I mean, like, yeah, it gets things going.
For me, it was super delayed if it did anything. But anyway, so I rested through those contractions and ended up, we got up around 7 a.m. and we went outside to do some curb walking. It was, you know, lightly snowing outside and like the cold air felt nice and kind of gave me a little bit of a second wind.
And how is your mindset at this point? Because things were kind of strong in the beginning.
Yeah, I definitely got like really overwhelmed and exhausted, but I did wake up with some degree of a second wind and like wanting to like get back at it. But I do remember, I don't remember anything that we talked about, but I know that while we were outside, we had like very emotional conversations about like what was kind of like potential labor blocks. And I don't really remember a lot of that conversation, but I know that it was a big thing.
And you were with the midwife, you were with Chloe, yeah, and your doula?
And Erica, yeah.
I love that they did that, by the way, because I feel like that's something, again, gosh, you're really going into things that aren't talked about that need to be. the mental blocks, it's real. Like, I have seen as a doula labor stall because there's something that is blocking them emotionally. Maybe it's a person that's there. Maybe it's the crossing some sort of threshold. So I just commend your team for opening it up and just seeing if that was something holding things up. So again, I'm glad that you said that because I think this again can help other people. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and spoiler alert, like, I ended up having extremely long labor, and I 100% believe in my bones that it was long because of a psychological holdup, and only that. Like, I believe that so firmly, and hopefully, as I tell the story, you'll see why. But so anyway, so we were outside, and we were outside for about 2 hours, and because my water had broken, I was like laboring in the pens the whole time and they just kept getting like soaked. So, I like quickly blew through like an entire package of them. So my husband had gone to like CVS to go get more. Before he left to go do that, I said to him, I was like, don't forget to lock the door or to leave the door unlocked. And so when we got back to the house, Erica and Chloe and I, and I was fully back into active labor, the snow had picked up.
With wet depends.
Yeah, with wet depends. We get back and sure enough, the door is locked. Long story short, I was just like outside panicking. Like, was something wrong? Did he get hurt? Like, or did he, is he just inside falling asleep?
Because I remember. Were you pissed at all? I'm just curious. Oh my God. I would have been so pissed.
I was so angry, but at the time, like before I knew what happened, I was also very afraid, like, because we had seen that he had moved my midwife's car, because it was in the driveway and she couldn't be there. And so I was like, did he get an accident? Did the dog get out? Like all these thoughts were going through my head. Eventually, with the help of the neighbor, we were able to get back in. And I walked back into our bedroom and there he is just asleep in the bed. And I was so angry at him. And I was like, I cannot believe you. He just like wakes up all disoriented. He's like, there's no excuse for this, was what he said to me. So I like threw him out of the room and, Chloe and Erica and I went into the bathroom, where I like continued laboring and I was so mad. I'm just like thinking to myself, I was like, this asshole literally just locked me out of my homework. And it was funny because, you know, one of the things I love most about him is how much he makes me laugh. And I kind of thought that maybe he would make me laugh during labor. And this was definitely not what I had in mind. But shortly after, I was just sitting in the bathroom, like laboring. And then I was so mad, but then I like burst out laughing because it was just so ridiculous.
Well, this is one of those things in years to come. You can be like, hey, remember that time you locked me out of the house while I was in labor with snow?
I mean, it is forever one of my favorite parts of the story because it's just so like, of course. But so, yeah, so, and, you know, it's, so we were in the bathroom laboring, and I think that's when the castor oil got brought in. And I think from this point was where things really started to kind of get, like, raw and just all sense of dignity and all the loveliness of the night before went out the window. And it was just, like, intense. Just such a slog. And like, so I was just laboring all day long. And eventually in the late afternoon or early evening or somewhere around there, it petered out again. And I was so frustrated at that point. And Chloe ended up needing to go home and I think she had just left to go home and rest, but then another one of her clients went into labor, and she actually delivered that baby. So somebody else like completely lapped me. like that person's labor started and ended before, like in the middle of mine.
And it must have been a slight blow to the ego.
Yeah, I was just, I mean, granted, she was a second time mom, but like, whatever. but so... And at some point, Erica had gone home as well, but Stephanie, the acupuncturist, was able to come back again. And so she did her thing, and everything had completely stopped at that point. And so after she had left, after Stephanie, the acupuncturist, had left, we were just in our living room. Like I felt completely fine at that point. I was just really frustrated, but like my husband had the Super Bowl in the background, and I was just so like, what the hell just happened here? Like everything stopped. Like I thought I was going to have a baby by now. And like, here we are just like watching the Super Bowl. Like what is like, it was so just not at all what I was expecting. But so yeah, so then the contractions did end up starting up again, I think somewhere around 11 o'clock.
Did you get a chance to rest during that time?
I didn't sleep, but I was like hanging out. I was rest in a way, I guess. And I did eat something. Oh, also I should say that, you know, throughout this whole time I had been vomiting throughout a lot of labor. And I think I had also, I did an IV for fluids at some point in this process. So that just like really kind of layered on the, what was happening.
So things picked up. When did they come back?
So I think somewhere around 11 o'clock that night, they on Sunday night, they kicked back in hard.
And how was your mental state around that? Because at this point, I'd imagine you're getting tired. Like, was there any part of you that's like, let's reconvene about our plans?
I know that I had been questioning, like, how I was going to do it the whole time. And, like, and again, I think that doubt of like, how I was going to push on top of contractions was what was really lingering in the background, which I think is just this broader theme of doubting my body's ability to, you know, birth a baby, to, you know, just kind of in general, just like this bigger theme of self-doubt that I think has kind of followed me throughout my whole life. And yeah, so, I mean, I was very tired. But I, at that point, I was in no way like ready to shift to the hospital or anything like that. But yeah, so they came on very quickly again and quickly ramped up quickly again. And Erica came back. So she had only gone home for maybe 3 hours. and so she came back, and Jacob had been with me for a lot of that time and been up with me. So he went and rested in the other room. And Erica came into the bedroom with me and this is one of the things that I really loved about the home birth experience. Like it was just so intimate in a way, like she just like spent the night with me and like was just with me throughout this really intense experience and just was really just such a support, like in a way that I, you know, you hear about how great doulas are, but just, I just couldn't have been more grateful that she was there. So at this point I was so exhausted, and I think I started to kind of hallucinate throughout this part of the experience, even though I was also aware that I was sort of hallucinating. Like my thoughts were just on this loop of nonsense. And the only specific thought that I remembered, because my doula like told me about it the next day, cause I had told her this, was that I thought that my contractions were being sponsored by a softball league, like just like utter nonsense. And I knew that they were nonsense, but it was just, I don't know. And I got into this weird rhythm where I would have a contraction and then walk to the bathroom and then have another contraction in the bathroom and walk back. And I just did that for hours and hours until eventually I fell asleep again, through like some contractions that had spaced back out. And so woke up, again that morning or Monday morning, and I was so exhausted and so frustrated. And I had this big emotional discussion with Erica. I remember talking about the miscarriage and just so many fears around motherhood and doubts about my body and just so much like came up then, and had this big cry. So that was just kind of a really, I was really grateful that she was kind of there for all of that. But got up, called Stephanie again to see if she could come back, and she could. So she was just amazing for being so available. And so she did come back, and Erica decided to wait to see, what was going to happen with all that. So when the acupuncturist came back, it was this time, like, I was so depleted and so like, all right, we got to do this, like, that the mood was like very serious in a way. And Stephanie, it was almost like she was like there was, it was almost ceremonial, like what she did, like she kept talking about like accessing my courage centers or like all this stuff that like, I don't even know, but it ended up, my contractions started during the acupuncture section. And when she left, I was fully in active labor again. And so this part of it, I was very determined to keep it going and moving and make this happen. But it was also the most grueling part of labor, where it was just, I was doing stairs and lunges and squats and,
she has stamina. Was there any point where you started to think, okay, this is days in, I'm doing so much physically. Were you considering transferring?
I was, and I wasn't. I think the hospital transfer, I think like I really wanted to do an unmedicated birth for a variety of reasons. One of which was just like, I had this intense curiosity of what that experience was like. And I really just wanted to know what that was. But I also was really looking for it to be a sort of healing experience that would kind of offer me this newfound understanding of my strength. And maybe people shouldn't look at birth for that. Maybe like, I don't know. I don't know. Like,
I don't think there's a should or shouldn't. I think it's personal. So, I mean, I think that's, yeah, I think if that's what you wanted, that there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So, but I also was very clear-eyed about, things come up. Like, you don't have control over your birth. Like even though I emotionally struggled with that, intellectually, I knew that, there's all kinds of reasons why things don't go as planned. But I think while I was totally, thank God nothing went wrong, but like, I think I would have been totally fine if there was a reason why we had to transfer for physical reasons. But I really didn't want it to be this, like, I just couldn't hack it thing, which is like, it's a lot of pressure. That's not necessary, but, But yeah, so I think at some point in there, I don't know, on Monday, like, I mean, it was hours and hours of this, like, workout, basically, to try and get things, you know, happening. And eventually I did just get so exhausted. And I told Chloe, I wanted to be checked again to see how close I was or not. And so at this point, because my water had been broken for so long, she said, I only get like one more check, for like infection reasons. And so I was like, do I want it now? Do I wait for it later? Like, all the, so she was giving me these options, and I did decide that yes, I do want to know. And, I was 8 centimeters. So, that again, with the labor math, like it wasn't quite what I wanted to hear, but it also wasn't like, I don't know, it was a little demoralizing that I had only dilated 2 centimeters in 2 days. But whatever. But I struggled for like 45 minutes knowing that I was so exhausted. And at that point, the thing that was really killing me was my muscles were so tense that I couldn't relax through contractions anymore. Mm-hmm. And so it took me, I want to say about 45 minutes to really come to the conclusion that like, my goal shifted that I wanted a vaginal birth. I wanted to avoid a C-section. And I felt like in order to get that, I needed to get an epidural and rest. And, otherwise I felt like I was headed for a C-section. So I ultimately made the decision to, go to the hospital. And I think that this was sort of my first big moment of surrender, where I kind of like acknowledged that defeat, if you will. And once I decided to go to the hospital, I immediately got into the shower, for the heat, which I couldn't use until, up until that point because it kept slowing things down. But so I immediately got in the shower and I just kind of went into managerial mode and started like barking orders at people to like get my contacts and my vitamins and all the stuff that like just didn't really matter. But I was just like, I'm going to control this transfer.
So we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, I want to hear what happened once you got to the hospital, because that was a big shift of plans. And, you know, it's like we talk about in prenatal yoga, it's we can't push the river. We have to let it flow. And sometimes that's hard. That's a big pill to swallow. So we're going to take a quick break and let's hear what happens once you arrive at the hospital. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. So you did it. You got there. You made that huge jump and got, you know, went into the mode of, all right, we're doing this. And you got there. What happened once you got there?
Well, I have to say that once I made that decision, I realized in retrospect that like my labor completely escalated. Like that emotional release just sent things like I went almost immediately into transition. So I took a really fun cab ride, in transition. I now realize, to the hospital where it was like a 30-minute cab ride that I just screamed the entire time. Like that was the only way to cope. I mean, nonstop screaming. And so once I got to the hospital, I screamed the entire way up into the hospital. And then once I crossed over into labor and delivery, the screams shifted into like screaming for an epidural. So I just screamed epidural, epidural over and over again. And so, you know, got into triage and all that. And I was only concerned with getting the epidural at that point. And I, eventually did get admitted. I got there probably around 8:30 or so, and was probably admitted like in the delivery room within an hour. I was finally able to get the epidural, a nurse came in and said that I needed a cervical check. And at that point, my muscles were so tense and my legs just felt fused together that I just could not fathom opening my legs to get a cervical check. Like it just didn't didn't compute. And so she kept saying I needed to get that. And I was just like, I will not do that. Like, I'm not doing that until I get my epidural. Like, absolutely not. And she kept saying it. And I was like, I will not. And then I kind of like went into my analytical brain for a moment. And I was like, if I say the consent word, then they can't. And so I was like, I do not consent to a cervical check until I get my epidural. And then like the nurse looked at Erica and was like, all right, you got to explain this to her. And so Erica explained to me that in order to get the epidural, I had to get a cervical check because it can be contraindicated if the baby's ready to come out. And so when she told me that, this was the biggest surrender of my entire life, where I got very quiet and she like, just the grief of understanding that I wasn't getting the epidural just washed over me. And it was just the biggest release of my life. And right at that moment, I felt the baby descend, like what I think is the fetal ejection reflex. Like he was coming out. It was
no epidural for you.
Yeah. And I never spoke of the epidural again. Like it just was, okay, I'm doing this. Like it wasn't even, I didn't even think about it. Like it was just, this is happening. Like, the midwives, I transferred to Woodhull, which was the plan as long as it wasn't an emergency. And the midwives there were just unbelievable. They were so fantastic. And, you know, everything with the kind of mood and intimacy that had been cultivated at home with the home birth, you know, they really offered me that continuity with all of that and respected everything. You know, I had a little birth preferences sheet laid out and they were just like, yep, we can do all of this. And, you know, and so the thing that I had feared all along about pushing, I don't have any context for what is normal, but they told me that I was very good at pushing. and you know, I really didn't need any guidance in that it, you know, everything kind of came from, you know, an intuitive sense of what I needed to do. And so I think I pushed for about 90 minutes or so. And he was, you know, again, I got to the hospital somewhere around 8:30, took an hour or so to get checked in, and he was born at 11:23. and when he came out, like, it was just like, I just have this flash of him being brought up. It was just this realization that the whole time this was it was a sudden realization that this was an actual person. It wasn't, you know, cause it's just like the baby, like, up until that point. But, you know, seeing his face for the first time was just, it was just so unbelievable. And then, we did not know the sex. And I was kind of convinced the whole time that it was a girl. Like I was just absolutely floored that, you know, my husband announced the sex. And I thought he was like trolling me because I was just so shocked that it was a boy. I remember like I totally got the golden hour, which was incredible. Where like, I still like his scent. One of my biggest regrets, is maybe this makes me a little crazy, but I like his scent. I had never smelled a newborn before. And also this is my newborn. So like the scent was so intoxicating. I really wanted to save some of the clothes that he had been wearing and put them in a Ziploc bag, which maybe that's crazy, but I really wanted that. And I, with all the commotion of coming home from the hospital, we just forgot that. But yeah, his scent and his skin just felt, it was just incredible. And it was just truly the most wonderful experience. And despite the transfer, you know, I feel like everything happened exactly as it should be. And when I got home from the hospital, a few days later, I, was in the shower, and I didn't cry after he was born at all. I was just elated. And I was in the shower, and I just kind of was thinking back to the miscarriage, and I just started sobbing because I realized that, you know, again, that the midwife who told me about Chloe, she, like, that, I wouldn't have learned about Chloe, if it hadn't have been for that miscarriage. So I kind of finally got this piece that that miscarriage was a sort of necessary step in getting this absolutely magnificent experience. And just, that was the most healing thing. And you know, it was supposed to be Wallace all along. So I just, I'm so profoundly grateful that, that I was able to work with Chloe, because not only was she so amazing, and really saw me through a very challenging experience. You know, she connected me with this whole incredible team of providers, including Stephanie, the acupuncturist, and Erica, who was just absolutely phenomenal, both during my birth as well as postpartum. And just this whole team of incredible providers that, you know, despite having a really difficult pregnancy, you know, they help, it just helps so much. And I just feel like in a regular model of care, without all of that care, extra care, like I think it would have just been an entirely different experience.
It sounds like on the other side of all this too, you really learn to trust yourself and to open to this path of, there are big bumps and ups and downs, but that you really, and tell me if I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but what I'm interpreting it is, you embraced the challenges and learned to trust the path and trust yourself that it ended up how it needed to end up.
Yeah. I mean, and actually one of the first things I said right after he was born, I like looked around the room because I was so shocked that I actually did this. I looked around the room and I said to everyone, I was like, don't ever let me forget how strong I am. And it was just,
I got a little tickled.
Like it really was something. And he was big too. He's 9 pounds, 6 ounces. and so, yeah, I'm very proud of myself it was just, for him to come into the world to a mother who just is so ecstatic and so empowered and so, like, that, I just feel like that's an amazing way to come into the world.
Oh, Jay, thank you so much for sharing this story. I wrote down, don't ever let me forget how strong I am, because that really resonated with me. And I think sometimes, as we all go through challenges, we can forget that we do have this reservoir of strength that maybe we didn't know we had.
Yeah. Yeah. This experience absolutely showed me that.
I don't ever want you to forget how strong you are. That is beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for sharing this. And I know that people listening are going to hear that there were doubts, there were moments, I don't know if I can do this, but you faced that wall and you did it. And it could be, it doesn't have to be unmedicated or whatever. It's just, people can recognize that a wall can be put in front of us and we have that place inside of us to get to the other side. So thank you.
Thank you for listening.
Oh, I loved it. Have a good day.
This has been an episode of Yoga Birth Babies, produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. You can catch us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Thanks for listening.